This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's been a great week. It really, and I've got a topic today. I am not sure what this all means, but I love this topic. Obviously, last week was episode 208, which was the completion of 4 years of podcast. So we're starting our fifth year today, episode 209. Woohoo! And this will be a little shorter because I had a couple of errands that I needed to run. Got those done, but I'm a little closer to home than I normally is. Normally am. But it's been a good week. Been able to accomplish the things this week that I needed to get accomplished. The week has had some challenges. And sometimes you don't know the best answer to resolve the challenges, but you just resolve the challenges. And it looks like I am getting the challenges resolved. I had known for some time that my laptop was in the process of dying. Well, certain parts of my laptop were in the process of dying. Thank God I actually have a laptop. And it's my bigger laptop because I have a smaller laptop. So it started with randomly shutting off, which I traced back to the fact that it thought it was getting overheated. Now, I say it thought it was getting overheated because it is in my basement. And so the air is pretty cool down there, and the fans were working and that sort of thing. So who knows? Anyways, in response to that, then it would just shut down the laptop. And so then I got a little cooling desk and put underneath it. That seemed to help for quite some time. The next thing that happened was something in the video card went bad, to where it would shut off, or some regulator, some sensor somewhere was causing the display to shut off. So I didn't have an LCD screen, so I hooked up another screen to it with the DVI port. Unfortunately, that doesn't actually come up until Windows gets a chance to boot. So every time I'd start it up, it would kind of be by faith. And I had already decided, okay, I'm just going to keep backing everything up and limping along until I get my taxes done. Once I get my taxes done, then I'll probably retire this and move everything over and yada, yada, yada. I actually got my taxes done last weekend, but I wanted to just sit on it for a while and see how I felt about things, and because many times in the past, I've had little whispers about, you should really recheck that number, so that happened several times, you should recheck that number, and I did, went back and rechecked a bunch of numbers, and it was like, oh yeah, this needs to be changed, that needs to be changed, so that's good. So got all that stuff changed. Wednesday morning, got it all changed, felt pretty good about it, and I had this little whisper that said, yeah, you should probably go ahead and just upload your taxes. And I thought, no, I'm just going to wait one more day, see if anything else comes to my mind. And I was getting ready to walk away from the computer, and I thought, you know, you should really back up what you've done, because I've been backing things up. So went in, saved the file, backed it up, TurboTax. And then something else happened where something had thrown an error, and I had learned the only way you can clear that is to reboot the machine. So I reboot the machine, and it won't come back up. It's mad about something, and I don't know what it's mad about because the laptop screen doesn't work. Yeah, it's DED. It's dead. The hard drive doesn't even spin up at this point. Although I think the hard drive's still good, but I have a full backup of the hard drive, so of all the important stuff on the hard drive, so. You know, once I get everything restored to the new machine, I may pull the hard drive and hook it up and see if there's anything there that I want to keep, but I'm sure it'll be fine. So, it's dead. But I had just made a backup. So, I went home Wednesday night and found my installation disk for TurboTax. Went ahead and installed that. And brought up the file, and everything was still there, and I checked the totals, and we were all good, and I went went ahead and filed my taxes, took care of that. Thank you, Jesus, for reminding me to make a backup. So that's all taken care of. That went well. I kind of thrashed around for a while as to whether or not I was going to build my own machine or buy a machine. I finally just bought a machine from Dell. I've usually had pretty good luck with those. And just a refurbed machine, so I got it cheaper, and not quite ready to make the jump to Windows 8 yet. So, you know, it'll be fine. So it's coming in. Hopefully it's going to come in tomorrow, I think. And I'll go through the process of getting my software set up on it. And ta-da, life will be good. So anyways, it's been fun. It's been a good week. This week, I have also been reading through Amanda and the Skleberry Tree to remind myself of what that voice is like. And then I'm going to start into the final edit. Well, not final edit, the beta edit on Amanda and the Hare-Footed Flare. I've asked some people as to whether it should be Amanda and the Hare-Footed Flare or the Hare-Footed Flame, and everyone seems to agree that Hare-Footed Flare is better. So, as soon as I finish my read-through, I'm going to start reading through the Amanda and the Hare-Footed Flare and doing my edits on that, a little tweaking, making sure the voice is consistent between the two books, and the mechanisms of the voice are consistent between the two books. Writing is a fascinating thing. It's just really, really fascinating. There is a certain mechanics to it that it's just better if you got all those mechanics straight. Anyways, so I love this topic I'm talking about today. I'm not sure exactly what this means in the larger scope of things, but this, I watched this TED Talk, and it was fabulous. It was just fabulous. The name of the TED Talk was Build a School in the Cloud. It was by a guy named Sugata Mitra. I think that's what his name was. And his whole talk was about what is the future of learning. He had some interesting things about the history of learning. He was saying our current present-day schooling is really based on something that was set up by the British 300 years ago. And it was basically set up to teach the British subjects how to be bureaucrats, how to be little clerks, to be able to work as clerks anywhere in the world. They had some requirements. They had to have good handwriting because all the data was handwritten. They had to be able to read. They had to be able to do multiplication, division, attraction, and subtraction in their heads. And they needed to be so identical that you could pick them up from anywhere, New Zealand, ship them to Canada, and they would be instantly functional. So he says that's kind of where our current, in his opinion, our current schooling comes from. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. And he says things have substantially changed since then. He said that what kind of jobs do we have to do today? He said, well, there are clerks. The clerks are the computers. There's thousands of them. And you have people who guide these computers to do their clerical jobs. And he's thinking that in the future, the types of jobs we're going to have are really going to change. And like I said, I don't know where this is all going, but he had some fascinating stories. I'm getting to those now. He said that he used to teach, 14 years ago, he used to teach people how to write computer programs in New Delhi. And he said right next to where he used to work, there was a slum. And he used to think, you know, who's going to teach those kids how to write computer programs? Because he recognized that technology is the wave of the future, and technology is a way for people to be able to make money if they're well-versed in technology, yada, yada, yada. So he said at the same time, he also had lots of parents of these rich people, you know, who would come and say, oh, my child is so gifted because he does such wonderful things with the computer, and my daughter, she's extra intelligent. And he said, I thought, well, you know, all these rich people, they all have gifted children. So he decided that he would do an experiment. He said he made a hole in the boundary wall of the slum that was next to his office, and he stuck a computer inside it just to see what would happen if he gave a computer to children who would never have one and didn't know any English and didn't know what the internet was. He said it was 3 feet off the ground. And he said, they said, they came running in when they saw this hole. They, what is this? And he said, yeah, it's, I don't know. Why have you put it there? Just like that. Can we touch it? I said, if you want to. He said, about 8 hours later, he came back and found them browsing and teaching others how to browse. And he said to himself, well, that's impossible. How is this possible? They don't know anything. And he said, my colleague said, well, obviously someone came by and showed them. Obviously. Because you just can't pick stuff up that fast. So he decided to do an experiment. He said, I went 300 miles out of Delhi, really remote village, where the chances of a passing software development engineer was very little. He said he repeated the experiment there. There's no place to stay, so he said, I stuck my computer in, I went away, came back in a couple of months, found kids playing games on it. He said, when they saw me, they said, we want a faster processor and a better mouse. And he said, I asked them, how do you know all this? And he said, in an irritated voice, they said, you've given us a machine that only works in English, so we had to teach ourselves English in order to use it. And he said, that was the first time as a teacher that I'd heard the word teach ourselves so casually. He said, so I started finding this fascinating, started studying them, started publishing, writing down what was happening, trying to measure. And he said, in 9 months, a group of children left alone with a computer in any language will reach the same standard as an office secretary in the West. He saw it happen over and over again. That's pretty amazing. That really is amazing. He said, I was really curious, though, to see just how much they could do. So he said, I started experimenting with subjects. He said, among them, pronunciation. He said, there's one community of children in southern India whose English pronunciation is really bad. He said, so I gave them a text-to-speech computer, and I said, keep talking until it types what you say. And he said he actually, one of the students of that experiment actually works at a call center because of her good diction. So anyway, now, he said he decided kind of to blow himself up and just kind of see how far he could push this. He said, so he made a hypothesis, a ridiculous hypothesis. He said, Tamil is a South Indian language. And I said, can Tamil-speaking children in South India learn the biotechnology of DNA replication in English from a street-side computer? Biotechnology of DNA replication in English from a street-side computer. No teachers. I'm getting my mail. One moment. So he sets up this computer, and he said by this time he had a fairly simple approach that he would use to all of this. And one moment, just need to check below. Okay. His fairly simple approach was he set this up, and he said he wanted to be scientific about this, so he tested the children, you know, in that area. He tested them. And he said, yeah, they got a zero. Because all of this stuff is in English, and it's biotechnology of DNA replication. So he puts this computer in Kali Kupam in South India, puts a hole-in-the-wall computer down there, said, downloaded all kinds of stuff from the internet about DNA replication, most of which, he said, I didn't understand. And he... Well, that's interesting. So the garage door on my side is not coming up, but the garage door on my wife's side did. Okay, I'm going to go open my garage door before my wife shuts it. It looks like my wife is heading to church. Hi, sweetie. Can you leave the garage door open? For some reason, my garage door opener is not working. It really weirded me out because I pushed the button at the same time you opened it. Okay. Anyways, so he says, you know, he gets this computer, he downloads all kinds of stuff from the internet about DNA replication, most of which I don't understand, and he sets up this computer. Remember, all of this stuff is in English. They don't speak English. So, of course, the kids, they come rushing over, because, you know, kids, they're just interested in everything. They come rushing in and they say, what's all this? And he said, I said, well, it's very topical. It's very important, but it's all in English. And they said, how can we understand such big English words and diagrams in chemistry? So by now, he said, I had developed a new pedagogical method. So I applied it. I said, I haven't the foggiest idea. And anyways, I'm going away. So sure enough, he leaves them for a couple of months. They got a zero. He said, I gave him a test, he said, before he left, and they got a zero. He said, I came back after 2 months, and the children trooped in and said, we've understood nothing. And that's to be expected. And so I said, well, what did I expect? So I said, okay, but how long did it take you before you decided that you can't understand anything? And they said, oh, we haven't given up. We look at it every day. I said, what? You don't understand these screens and you keep staring at it for 2 months? What for? So a little girl, and he showed a picture of her, raised her hand and she says to me in broken Tamil and English, well, apart from the fact that improper replication of the DNA molecule causes disease, we haven't understood anything else. I love this. I just love this. He said, so he tested them. And he said, I got an educational impossibility. They had gone from 0 to 30% in 2 months in the tropical heat with a computer under a tree in a language they didn't know, doing something that's a decade ahead of their time. He said, it's absolutely absurd. But he said, of course, I had to follow the Victorian norm and 30% is a fail. So he said, how would I get them to pass? I would have to get them 20 more marks. He said, I couldn't find a teacher. He said, what I did was find a friend they had, a 22-year-old girl who was an accountant. She played with them all the time. She said, so he asked the girl, can you help them? And she says, no, I can't help. She said, I didn't have any science in my school. I have no idea what they're doing under that tree all day long. I can't help you. And I said, well, why don't you use the grandmother method? She said, what's that? He said, just stand behind them. And whatever they do, just say, wow, I mean, how did you do that? What's that next page? Gosh, when I was your age, I could have never done that. He said, you know, what grannies do. He said, so this girl agrees to do this. She does it. He said he comes back in 2 months and the scores jump to 50%. So he said, Kali Kupam had caught up with my control school in New Delhi, a private school with a trained biotechnology teacher. It's amazing. It's amazing. He goes on, and he talks about the potential future. He talks about his own project where he went to England looking for British grandmothers, and he said it put out notices. And he said, if you're a British grandmother and you have broadband on a web camera and you can give me 1 or 2 hours a week for free. And he said, I got 200 of them. And all these grandmothers do is they just get on the horn with these kids in India or whatever, and they laugh with them and they ask them to show what they did for their work assignment, all that kind of stuff. Really amazing. Really amazing. So, you know, what does all this mean? Well, the guy has started these self-organizing learning environments where he believes that having this information available on the internet actually can create a whole new paradigm in education, which I think he's right. But for me, you know, when I saw all of this, it was just such a wonderful, mysterious, beautiful, amazing thing that these kids who speak a completely different language, that their minds, who are probably malnourished, that their minds had such capabilities. And sometimes there's just things like this that come along that when I see them, I just think, wow, wow, that just really is amazing that the mind is capable of that. And I am in awe again at what our God has designed and what potential we have if we'll just set aside fear and let our curiosity go and not be afraid to keep moving forward and be a little persistent. Fun stuff. Fun stuff. It's interesting. He said he'd gone to the top of the Himalayas, 12,000 feet where the air is thin, and he said, I once built 2 hole-in-the-wall computers and the children's flocked there. And there was this little girl who was following me around, and I said to her, you know, I want to give a computer to everybody, every child. I don't know. What should I do? And I was trying to take a picture of her quietly, and suddenly she raised her hand, and she said to me, get on with it. You know, there's so, so much potential in every human life. So maybe one of the challenges of our week should be, you have the opportunity to help someone realize their potential, even in a small way, take it. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.